The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2014 Annual Conference, copyright 2014. If you have purchased this recording, you are free to make multiple copies for your school's use. You may not sell copies of the audio or post copies on the internet. Order additional conference recordings from this year's conference or previous conferences at store.accsedu.org. Find out more about the Association of Classical and Christian Schools at www.accsedu.org. Thank you.
By my watch, it's 10 after. Is that right? Well, actually, by my computer. So I'll begin by introducing myself so we can get right down to business. For those of you who don't know me, my name is John Mays. I started a company called Novare Science and Math, and our mission, my personal mission, is to change the way science and math are taught in schools in this country. I believe in almost every school it's being done badly. So one of the things I do is talk to schools about how to teach it differently, pointing out the problems, the nature of the problems, and the solutions that I've worked out over the last 15 years to those problems. And another thing I do is write texts and teacher resource materials. So I'm coming out with a line of science texts to cover the courses in 7th through 12th grade right now. I'm about halfway through that project or thereabouts. If you haven't been around to see our booth yet and look at the texts that we have on display, they're quite different than other texts. And some of you have been, and we've already had long conversations this week. The rest of you I invite to come around as well. This talk is drawn from an article I published in my newsletter last September, which reminds me, another thing I want to say by way of introduction, you don't really need to take notes unless you just want to. I publish a free newsletter 5 or 6 times a year, and anyone who wants to can stop by our booth and put your email address down there, and from now on you'll get it until you unsubscribe. And it's a PDF file. It's just a link to a PDF file that you can receive. And all the past issues of the newsletter are archived on our website. You can download any of them that you want. I developed this talk last summer, this presentation, last summer, because I had a conversation at the ACCS conference last summer about sequencing in the high school science. And I persuaded the individual to look at it my way, but he was not the decision maker. So to give him some ammunition during the summer to persuade his administrators that we should do it this other way, and use my text, of course, in the process. So I wrote him basically what became the article. I sent it to him, and that was successful. And they made that decision, and now they're using our materials. And then I published that in the fall in an article that has a name that's similar to that. So all of that to say that the content here and the graphics and the charts are all in that article, easy for you to get access to. You can just download it off our website, which is NovareScienceAndMath.com. I usually forget to mention this, but our name, Novare, for those of you who aren't fluent in Latin, is a Latin infinitive verb that means to renew. We're all about renewing science and math education because I believe it's moribund in America. So, where I'm going to get to eventually in this talk is to a chart that shows a sequence of math and science, 7th through 12th grade courses, and I want to talk about the benefits, which are many, of sequencing the courses this way. Before I get there, though, I want to just offer a few comments that kind of set the stage for this conversation. I've bumped into several schools in the last couple of years that are wrestling with some of the new state standards for science that are being written these days. And I've observed that in many cases, the standard calls for every junior to take a vector trig-based physics class. I was horrified the first time I heard that. I've been teaching a vector-based physics class for something like 17 years. I know who can do that work, and it's not every single teenager in America, by a long shot. It maybe is 10% of them. That's the numbers we typically have in our school, is 10% or so of the senior class taking that physics class. It's non-calculus, but it is definitely vector methods. Well, not only was I horrified by hearing about the idea, but our faculty, 2 years ago, I left my full-time position as a teacher at Regents School of Austin, where I've been teaching since 1999, and began working full-time as a writer and publisher of the new curriculum that I mentioned. But before I left as a full-time teacher, our faculty went to visit another school, a very large, non-classical Christian school, a school with something like 1,500 students. So by our general standards, quite large. They had about 600 in their high school. They were doing this junior course thing. They had it broken down, sort of a more difficult version of the course would lead to AP Physics the following year for the kids who could handle that. And they had one section of that. And they had five sections of the course that would deal with all the other kids who were not going to be rocket scientists and so on. Still, it was a course based on vector solution methods, vector concepts, vector methods. I sat in the class and observed the class the entire period. Our visit occurred in the month of April, right near the end of the school year. I sat on the back row right behind two girls who were sitting right in front of me, 10 feet in front of me, and they were on the back row of the students. The teacher that day returned an exam to the students that they had taken the previous day. The two girls on the back row, I overheard one of them say to the other one, "What did you make?" And the other one replied, 43. And the first girl said, "Ha, I made a 40. I beat you." "I made a 40. I beat you. Because you made a 43. What does it say about a school where that conversation happened in April? This to me, I heard that and I just thought, this is a complete educational collapse. And now I'm going to start crying like I do every time, because I hate the way our broken educational system is crushing our teenagers. I had three, and now they're all lovely, beautiful women, but I'm passionate about the exercise in futility that represents, and I want to encourage us to rethink the way we're approaching teaching. The whole enterprise of classical education is one component about how to do that. Another component is to study our pedagogy and our methods. And a lot of what I write about is along those lines. Well, moving on from that story, I do not believe that a vector trig physics class should be given to every teenager in America. I believe it's appropriate for about 10% of them, and my favorite place to put it is in the senior year. I'm good friends with Ravi Jain, who teaches at Geneva here in Orlando, and he does something different. They have a two-year combined calculus physics sequence for the bright, best sort of students, and that seems to be working well. Most of the schools I talk to, that would be hard to pull off. So I don't include that particular course sequence in my discussion here. So in most cases, I've found that I'll come back to the AP physics question at the end when we talk about AP considerations briefly. So I'll save the rest of that till then. But for now, I'll just say where vector physics should be for most people is senior year, and it's not for everybody. Like I said, our school is about 10% of the senior class takes it. Now, there's another general consideration. A lot of states have biology listed as the course all the freshmen take. The reasoning here is that biology at that level is fairly easy. It involves a lot of memorization, but it doesn't involve much math. These kids, you know, they're 14, don't have a lot of math skills yet. It's a perfect opportunity to put biology in there and get it out of the way. And then they can take these other classes when they're older. But the problem with that is that this is a massive, major lost opportunity. And that's what I'm going to talk about a lot in a minute. A third thing that we need to talk about by way of preliminaries is that the sequencing plan that I'm going to present is based on stratifying students into accelerated and grade level, I call them pathways. Tracks is easier to say, but has negative connotations with some people. The program I'm going to present to you is based on separating the students into accelerated and grade level groups beginning with the year that they take Algebra 1. Now, grade level placement for Algebra 1 is 9th grade. Accelerated placement for Algebra 1 is 8th grade. A really, really smart student, and we have at Regents in a grade of 80 students, we have one or two each year who can handle algebra in 7th grade. Most of the time, on a long-term average, 50% of the students are doing algebra in 8th grade. About 50% of them are doing algebra in 9th grade. I talk all the time. I know exactly what most of you are thinking right now. That is, our school is so small, we can't afford to split grades up like that, classes up like that. We can't afford to pay all these teachers. But I advocate that you need to afford it. You need to start thinking about how can we say that we will afford it. That's what I want to encourage you to do. The justification for doing this is not necessarily really the subject of my talk today, so I can't dwell on that. That's an hour conversation about why we need to stratify the students. But just to summarize briefly, if you're in English or history, you might be a slow reader. You might not be that great of a writer. You might be sort of a mediocre student. But it's not a problem to comprehend what's going on in the classroom. You might get as good grades as the next guy, but you can at least comprehend the language that's being spoken. And that's not like that in math. If your mathematical abilities are on a different level than someone else, well, then one person will be bored or the other person will be lost. And the one-room schoolhouse thing is extraordinarily difficult to pull off unless you have about three students where you can devote a lot of personal time, which is not most of us. Most of us have a few students. So I strongly encourage schools that once you get to the point where you've got at least 10 kids in a grade, that's financially difficult to split them at that point and make two classes of five, but that's the place where you should start trying to figure out how to make it happen. raise the tuition just a little bit to get one more teacher in there or something. Certainly by the time you have 20 students in a grade, now it's pretty easy. 10 kids in a class is financially fine. So I can't go further into the justification of this, except I can encourage you that I do have an article explaining this in detail in my newsletter. It was probably 4 years ago. But if you go on my website and click on the newsletter archives and scroll way down to the bottom, you'll find an article called Stratifying Math Students in Math. Now, I'll say further that the science sequence I'm going to present is keyed to the math sequence. The linkage is where chemistry and algebra 2 occur. Right, so that's why I'm talking about math in my science sequencing talk, is because these things are joined at the hip. Now, again, placement issues is also not the subject of my talk today, but I'll just briefly mention these three things. Because this is always a question schools have. It is, well, okay, if we accept your position and we decide to split our student body into a couple of ability groups for math and science, how does that placement work, and how do you deal with parents that want their child, who they know for a fact is going to be a heart surgeon when she grows up and needs, therefore, to be in the accelerated track regardless of her math scores? How do we? These are questions that everybody has. So I'll just mention a couple of things here, and that is you start your placement decision-making at the end of sixth grade when you've got standardized test scores, a track record with a teacher, and a set of grades to look at, and you put all those data in a spreadsheet, and you make preliminary placement decisions. You say, these are the definites, these are the definitely nots, and these are the borderline cases. And then you communicate that to the parents and consider these placement decisions tentative, and consider that the confirmation of the placement will be the proof in the pudding the next year. Let's see how the student does in this class that we believe is the right one for him or her. In the early part of seventh grade, so you've got two pre-algebra classes now. One is leading for students to jump into algebra the following year. One is leading for a sequence of 2 years for the students to jump into algebra in their ninth grade year. In the first semester of this time period in seventh grade, these two classes will be close enough together that lateral movement is not difficult to manage. If a student starts suddenly shining or struggling, it's pretty easy to slide people sideways. You can give an algebra readiness test at the end of seventh grade and see who actually is ready for algebra. And it might be people in either track, actually. And then you make your algebra placement decisions based on that. And then third, you can. There are other ways to provide people opportunities to move from the grade level track to the accelerated one. Of course, anyone can move down anytime they want if they repeat a class. But to move up becomes difficult once we get past algebra. So one way to do that, which we do at Regents, is allow students the opportunity to test out of a class like geometry and then skip ahead in the sequence. It's kind of hard to skip ahead in the science sequence because the two sequences don't line up with each other. The math sequences are the same. They're just delayed by a year. The science is actually a different sequence of classes. So the way our geometry thing works, and I'll just mention this briefly, is the student is on his own to do a self-study of geometry, however he can get it. Online, buy a book, we don't care, we don't help. And then at the end of the summer, come in, take our final exam that you would have taken had you taken geometry here, and if you make an 83 or higher, we'll allow you to go into Algebra 2. Otherwise, you're taking geometry. And if you make an 82, you're taking geometry. You're not taking the test over or anything like that. It's all or nothing. This has worked really well. It's allowed some students whose mathematical aptitude switch clicked on when they were in ninth grade, and they thought, wow, I can actually do more, and I can get to AP calculus if I'll switch over, and so they'll do it. We don't count that study that they do for anything. It's just a way to skip ahead. They still have to take as many math classes as before to graduate, and it has no effect on their GPA and things like that. So that's just a little summary of some of the issues surrounding math placement in the middle school. Now, certainly. Yeah, I've talked to a lot of schools about this. So in case you didn't hear his question was some schools are putting geometry after algebra 2 and putting the algebra 1 and 2 back to back. The logic is that we don't want the students to forget their algebra 1 before they go to their algebra 2. We want them seamlessly connected, right? My response to that is, maybe threefold. First, if your students are forgetting their algebra 1 during their year of geometry before they go to algebra 2, then something in your math education is broken. Your geometry tests should have algebra problems on them so that students don't forget their algebra 1. In fact, my mantra, this button that I'm wearing, is break the cram, pass, forget cycle. This cram for a test, passed it, and then 3 weeks later, forget everything. That's the norm in America. That's an exercise in futility. I promote teaching using methods that require retention, long-term retention of what we learn. And there are ways to ensure that your students do not forget their Algebra 1 during the year they're taking geometry. Another response is that geometry is a subject that fits really well with the age that they're in. It's really close to the end of their sort of school of logic years. They're able to use some of the syllogisms and other things they learn in logic when they're constructing proofs in geometry. They're also at a natural age where their inquisitiveness about geometry is very fruitfully accessed. There's all kinds of fun problems that can be very challenging to a 14 or 15 year old, but which are less challenging to someone that's older. And so it fits in really well programmatically. And third, seeing no really good reason to change the sequence, changing it just causes a lot of problems between the way everybody else sequences things and the way your school sequences things for students transferring in and out. Now, of course, you could throw the same argument back at me because I'm going to propose a science sequence that doesn't line up with what the state schools are doing. However, my argument to that, my response to that is, but I have really good reasons for realigning it this way, and there just simply aren't really good reasons for switching the maths around that way. Some schools do it, and it's fine if you want to do that. I mean, it doesn't kill anybody to do that. I just haven't found any compelling reason to go there. So let's look then at the math sequence because this ties to the science sequence. So this will be our bridge. So the yellow row of classes is what I call the grade level sequence. So notice that Algebra 1 occurs in ninth grade. We have at Regents School in Austin, I introduced AP statistics at the school as a new course some time ago now. It was the smartest thing we ever did for the senior level math for grade level students. And in fact, once we did it, we realized that, well, let me hit this next button here. We were always offering pre-calculus to those students their senior year. And once I introduced AP Stats, which I taught, we offered these both for a while. And I think now they're back. I'm not full-time at Regents anymore, but I think now they're back to offering them both. I'm not sure about how that decision occurred. I do know that AP Statistics is a perfect fit for those students. Almost all college degrees interact with statistics now at some level, even the humanities. A lot of students who are in this track are people who are going to study business of one sort or another, so it's immediately relevant to them. Pre-calculus is quite abstract, and there are a lot of students in that pre-cal class right there who never do understand what the sine function is. They just never do get it. They'll memorize a few solutions to problems, but if you walk up and say, so what is the sine function? They'll go, well, I don't know. She demonstrated it one day with some shadows and a wheel, and I didn't really know what she was talking about. So I have found, now I taught AP Stats to that group of kids for a couple of years, and no one failed it. There were a couple of students who almost failed it, but it turned out in the end that they weren't studying. That's why they almost failed it. It wasn't because they were cognitively unable to pass. In fact, one boy whose average was 60 or something, so now he's got to make a pretty good grade on the final to pass. He told his parents, well, the reason my grade is the way it is because I haven't studied all year. This was 3 weeks before the final. He made a 97 on the final exam. I thought, well, that's a little risky. But if it buys you all this time during the year where you can hang out with your friends, you make your call. But I'm more conservative than that. I like to get my work done and then play. But so this is the sequence that I recommend for math. Now let's look at the accelerated sequence. So this sequence actually splits into two again at the 11th grade. So we got our algebra occurring in 8th grade, and then the geometry in algebra 2. Then pre-calculus and calculus. The other possibility is to have two separate pre-cal classes for this accelerated group of students, which, as a reminder, on average would be 50% of your student body, although it could vary over time. I've seen variations 40, 60 either direction. Some years it's almost perfectly half and half. I will say, just in passing, for those who are skeptical that we need two math tracks, like the people who live in Lake Wobegon, where all the children are above average, and who say all of our students take algebra in eighth grade, and they all do just fine. We're totally happy with that. Well, that's the way Regents was in 1999. When I went to teach there for the first time. But what I found out was, no, everybody's not fine. The reason everybody's passing is because homework counts 30% of the grade. And homework demonstrates nothing when it comes to actually learned mathematics. It's necessary to do it to learn the math. But it's not a legitimate way of demonstrating that you have learned the math. The math exam, that's where you show me the money. Show me that you've learned how to solve problems and answer questions about these topics. So if you pull out that 30% crutch, then you'll find, on average, half the students will struggle mightily just to get a C, which is not what we want. And a lot of students won't pass at all. My oldest daughter was one of these, because when we started at Regents, she was in seventh grade. And the stratification program that I implemented started up like 1 year behind her and followed her up. So she had my pre-cal class when she was a junior, which back then was only just one pre-cal. It was this one, advanced pre-cal. She made a 60 on like every test and would have failed, except back then we had the homework counts 30% rule. I hadn't abolished that yet. Lucky for her, she graduated. But also not lucky for her, we didn't do her any favors by letting her go through the program like that. She went to college and had a terrible time with math at college. Even when I was tutoring her at home in the summers, it was not pleasant. Yes? Two years to do it. No. You go more slowly through the body of content and you stretch it out over 2 years with lots of review and lots of constantly working problems that you're supposed to know already, and just the goal is absolute mastery of orders of operations and fraction multiplying and all those things that or preludes to the actual linear algebra that you get to in Algebra 1.
So they are split in 7th grade. It's not one.
Right. They're split, but at the very beginning, the courses are starting from the same place, and yeah, one's going faster than the other one, but by December, the accelerated kids aren't that far ahead. So someone who wakes up all of a sudden says, oh, I got to be in the accelerated, we can make that happen. Someone who needs to go the other way because they're making 69s all the time, can just back up a little bit. Does someone else have a hand up over here? All right. Yes.
I'm sorry. If you could just tolerate another question on the levels. I agree with you. But one of the criticisms that I hear is there is no other place in our curriculum where we allow people to divvy up.
Right.
Does that mean then that the criticism is that we are making math actually more important than Bible?
Well, I noticed you came in just a couple of minutes after I started, so maybe I said this before you got here. That's okay. The thing is, if you're sitting in English, you can comprehend everything that's going on in that room and get a C in English. Just because you're not a good writer, you haven't practiced much, you read slowly, or you don't like to read, so you never read, and you're not prepared, and so on. But you will not be lost in class. You're perfectly, they're speaking the same language you speak. But a student who can't hang out mathematically with the students that the teacher's talking to will be utterly lost and unable to even follow what you're talking about. If you don't understand what the quadratic formula is and all those symbols are difficult for you to process, and why is there a plus and a minus in there? How can one number be both? Well, you know, it's not one number, it's two numbers. Well, it's one thing. So, then when you start solving quadratic functions, they can't do that. They never even understood this connection here. So they can be completely and utterly lost, radically lost. And that's the difference. Because this doesn't happen in the humanities. In the humanities, the slowest kid in the school can sit in the same room with the hot valedictorian of the school, and they can, in fact, profit from being together in the same room and conversing with one another in their heartness discussions and all that. Now, in math, certainly, it's profitable for a skillful student to explain things to a student who doesn't get it yet. That's really profitable. But there's other ways to make that happen. The thing is, if the teacher's talking to the ones who are, you know, at the upper end of the class spectrum, then the other ones will simply be clueless. And they need to go slower. Even if they take the exact same Algebra 2 class, it's just 1 year later, the ones who take it as sophomores will go much faster and much deeper in through the curriculum than the juniors do 1 year later. They need much more practice, much more patient explanations, much more tutoring, help, so on. So they're different. Yes? Oh, yeah, the answer to that question is it's really hard to let everybody take everything. However, we have had students take it and take AP Calculus and physics all at the same time. It's just that that's not what most students do. But we have had some students who were so thirsty for all science and math curriculum, which they can't really get because half the senior year is required rhetoric classes and stuff, but they can kind of get half of it, so they'll max that out, skip the fourth year of Latin. I just heard today that Regents is shifting the program up a little bit further to create opportunities for the really high-performing math kids to move through geometry more quickly and save some space down at the back end for more math opportunities. And perhaps part of that thinking is some students might want to do just that. Here's another response that, and you can accept this argument or not, but I think there's some validity to it. A lot of people complain about statistics in college being really difficult. Well, AP statistics is accessible to everyone with at least average abilities, and taking it in high school can lighten your pain when you get to your college class. And those are the kinds of kids who can really benefit. The students on the accelerated track, when they go to college and take engineering statistics or something like that, it's no big deal. I took my first stats class when I was getting my master's in education. It was a total, it was easy. But many students would not regard it that way. Yes?
In the standard track, the yellow.
Yes.
No.
My youngest daughter went down on her knees the summer before her senior year and said, "Papa, do I have to take math my senior year?" Well, in the state of Texas, if you want to go to a state school, you have to, because they have a four-year admission requirement for everywhere, UT, A&M. And I told her that, and she said, "That's fine. I won't go to school in Texas." I said, "Okay, well then, no, you don't have to take math." And then she started, like, kissing my feet. And literally getting her through math, Algebra 2, was so, it wasn't that she complained or kicked against the goads, it's just that she had really difficult time understanding what the heck you're talking about. And even though I was tutoring her, her Algebra 2 year, I tutored her twice a week at night. For an hour, we set it up, and that was how she survived. And for her to not be forced to take math that senior year was like being let out of prison, and it changed her life. Yeah. Yes.
Just a quick follow-up, and not to get it too personal to our school. If you can just speak quickly to it, at our school, since we can't yet afford the two tracks, we try to do it by everyone does what's on your blue track until 11th grade, and then and then their senior year, they don't necessarily have to take it. How are we damaging, or what would be the weakness in that?
Were you here from the beginning of my
yes.
talk? Okay, so you heard my remarks about make it a priority to split
yes.
the tracks as soon as it's financially even conceivable, and that if everybody's in eighth grade algebra and they're all making B's or A's, it's because they're being propped up by their homework crutch, all right? So that's the problem we're trying to solve.
Okay.
And my answer is just that you need to get there as fast as you can, and in the meantime, do whatever you have to serve your kids as well as possible, and there's lots of ways to answer that question. And then a transitional arrangement that we used at Regents and plenty of people use, and that is to combine all the geometry students together. It's just that half of them are sophomores and half of them are freshmen. And then combine all the Algebra 2 people. Now, this at least means you're teaching everybody the same subject. You still have the issue that the younger students in any particular course are going to run circles around the older ones, get through it faster, and all that. And the teacher needs to be creative about not creating this destructive dynamic in class, but fostering a sense of cooperation and help between the different groups of students. But, and then as soon as possible, get everybody into separate classes. All right, now, there's the whole math sequence. Oh, just a couple more things. I did a lot of research when I was introducing AP statistics, and I found almost no school that had a statistic class that wasn't an AP class. So if you're going to do statistics, go ahead and make it AP statistics. The thing is, the students can handle it, and it gives them a badge of honor on their transcript that most of them probably won't have. These are not AP kinds of kids. So it gives them a chance to shine and have that credential on their college application. And down here, I'll say that the AP calculus is a hard test. And a lot of students who are perfectly capable doing calculus are not capable of moving fast enough to get everything done that you need to do in order to practice this exam and stuff and be all ready by the time AP tests come around. So we've always had this split occur right here after Algebra 2 for the accelerated students so that some of them could be on the AP calculus wavelength and others can be just on the regular calculus wavelength, and that works very well. So now here's where the linkage to science comes in, and now we're going to switch to science. So you really can't do a decent job of chemistry unless the student is either concurrently enrolled in Algebra 2 or has already completed Algebra 2. It can happen after that, of course. But you've got all these pH calculations with logarithms. You've got power functions in your reaction rates. You've got a lot. So I believe chemistry, the most workable thing to do is to schedule your chemistry so that it occurs the same year Algebra 2 occurs. Now, I'll tell that story in a moment when we get to this, to the science sequence. I want to talk now about the benefits of putting physics first. No, that's not a typo. That was me trying to be funny. So, first, if your physics is my physics, using the books that I've written, here's what the students will have in their mathematical bag of tricks during ninth grade. And I'm not talking a little. I'm talking about utter and total dominance over these basic math skills. When I was in high school and I took my junior chemistry class, I'd never heard of significant digits until that day, and I'd never heard of unit conversions until that day. I was 16. And that made chemistry miserable to me. It's so hard because there's all this basic stuff that I'd never been taught. I've been teaching these things to ninth graders now for a dozen years, and they, some of them don't put enough time in to really get as good as I would like them to be at doing the significant digits thing, but they all do kind of at least understand it. They could put a little more effort into it. But the rest of that stuff, they master it. Unit conversions, metric system, scientific notation, using the scientific notation button in your calculator correctly rather than the 10 to the X button and getting every answer wrong, metric stuff, right? They're going to have this down. That just goes off the board in chemistry. You just don't really have to deal with it. Next, these are topics covered in the freshman physics books that I've written that are all over the place in chemistry. Having had these things first, you show up in chemistry knowing about energy. You know that kinetic energy is 1/2 mv squared, so when you get to the kinetic molecular theory of gases and all, that's nothing new to you. You know about electric charge. You know it comes in two flavors. You know where the charges are located in the atom. You can convert from Celsius to Fahrenheit easily, or Kelvins. You know about different modes of heat transfer. You know about waves, so that when we get to spectroscopy, and then that makes sense. You know about basic ideas of atomic modeling. Of course, in chemistry, we're going to go way deeper and get into the whole shells thing, but you at least know the history of the development of the atomic model, starting with Dalton in my books, and then J.J. Thompson, Rutherford, and so on up to, and I jump ahead and tell them about Chadwick just to finish off the nucleus. He discovered the neutron in 1932, and then we stop and say a little about Niels Bohr, just a little. And then that's kind of where we pick the trail up in chemistry, right? So there's a lot of background here that pays off royally in chemistry. So that's my second reason for putting physics in ninth grade, which is what I mean by physics first. First is basic math skills that are now totally no problem and therefore will cause no misery when we get into chemistry later. And second is all these fundamental and quite readily accessible topics in physics which don't require any math higher than Algebra 1, really. So it's accessible to everybody. My third reason is that I think everyone should take physics somewhere. I mean, everything around us, right, it relates to physics. So much of your understanding of an adult conversation when we talk about science in the news can really make or break your ability to track with that conversation based on whether you have some basic knowledge of physics. You don't have to do calculus. You don't have to do vectors. But you do need to understand some basic things about heat. You know, why does this MacBook feel cold when I pick it up? Well, what's going on with the heat transfer and the aluminum? All right, that's such a easy thing for students to understand and then have it down. So I think everybody should take physics. But based on my remarks earlier, A, all juniors in the nation are not suited for vector physics. So that's not it. The senior one is for the 10%, right? Well, where does that leave everybody else? Where's the other 90% going to get their physics class? This is where that is for most students. This is where that will be. For most people, they'll get this good physics class. It's not a conceptual physics. I know I used to teach Paul Hewitt's conceptual physics. I stopped using it after a time because I started writing material that would eventually turn into my books because I discovered these kids can do way more math, even the grade level ones. They have so much more ability than we're tapping into. I'm not saying forcing them to operate at an accelerated level. I'm just saying they can solve the density equation for volume and figure out what the volume is by a little algebraic manipulation. They can do that, yes.
So between physics, are you referring to a year-long physics?
Yes.
Well,
I'll get to that in a second. I used to call my accelerated physics class, physics and chemistry intro class for ninth graders, a physical science class. I used to. I now reserve that term for a seventh grade class, and I have a new book for them. So that's a, you know, lower level treatment. The math is quite introductory. At ninth grade, we're going to go a little more heavy on the math. And so I don't call that physical science anymore, although that's what it is. I mean, physics and chemistry, that's basically the physical sciences. So now I've set stage. Here's my recommendation for what we do. So here's our physics. I'm going to start with the grade level students. So we got our physics in ninth grade. So leading up to that, I don't know anyone who's doing this, but if I were to start a school, this is what I would do. Regents doesn't do physical science in seventh grade. They do life science in seventh grade, and the sixth grade does whatever the grammar school does, all right? So they really only have a two-year middle school. I probably wouldn't put sixth grade in the middle school if I was starting a school from scratch, but I would probably say, let's make sixth grade science be life science because it's pretty simple conceptually. And then we can, in physical science, when their math abilities are more getting up into the pre-algebra era, we can start doing introductory physics and chemistry things. In my book for that class, the seventh grade class there, my text introduces numerical, mathematical things halfway through, right at the halfway point, which means they've already completed an entire semester of pre-algebra and so that gives them time for their math skills to kind of get a little more developed before we start saying, here's the equation for density. Earth science is a text I'm going to write next year. And is a nice fit in between 7th and 9th. You had your hand up.
Can you describe the physical
science course as a pre-chem, pre-physics? I'm sorry,
I didn't understand your...
Would I call, would I say that physical science is physics and chemistry?
I'm asking.
The seventh grade course.
Well, I mean, physical science is physics and chemistry. So those are the topics. So, but they're just at a very basic level. And in fact, the way I wrote the book was to start off by talking about what are the basic things the universe is made of. And matter and energy and intelligence was my answer to that question. And then we get into basic things like what is an element and things like that. Did I answer your question? All right. Now, here's the rest of the sequence for the grade level students. You see the chemistry there in the junior year, where their Algebra 2 occurs. Biology is the sort of obvious thing to put in 10th grade for them. 12th grade, at Regents, we teach anatomy and physiology, but teacher asked me a few months ago, what would you think about an environmental science class for those seniors? And I thought, that's a pretty good idea. If your school opted to go that way, you could have a lot of fun with a class like that, and it would be obviously quite relevant to their lives, as anatomy and physiology is. They're teenagers, right? They like talking about anatomy. So here is the accelerated science sequence. There is so much to say right here. Since Algebra 2 occurs in the sophomore year for these students, and therefore chemistry can occur then, that means we can put biology after chemistry. And that means that biology can be way more high level than the sort of traditional biology. Traditionally, we have human organ systems, genetics, plants. You can, with chemistry first, you can make a lot of your junior biology class sell chemistry because they know the chemistry now. Just a brief anecdote about this. When I first, my second year at Regents, I was the head of the upper school. I only did that for 1 year, and I hastily scrambled back down to the faculty and realized my gifts weren't there. So, but anyway, during that year, I was approached by a man who was one of our dads who was on the admissions committee for MIT. He was a pathologist. He had a big franchise of pathology clinics that he had founded. He was a very smart guy. And he asked to conference with me, and in the conference he said, the sequence that you guys presently do, where... which was the yellow sequence, even though everybody was in algebra in eighth grade, the science sequence was the yellow sequence there. He said, nobody graduating with that sequence is going to be able to compete for entry into a school like MIT or other selective colleges. These other kids who are competing for those admission slots, they're taking AP biology and these high voltage biology classes, and your kids just won't even be able to compete. And he said, you need to move some of the easier topics out of biology into maybe life science, like human organ systems, which is pretty accessible, and it doesn't take away that much to move it down a few years. And then increase the attention you pay in biology to cell chemistry. He said, really, you should make half that year cell chemistry. And then you can put the genetics and stuff in around it. And I said, well, if we do that, if we're going to have cell chemistry for half a year in biology, shouldn't chemistry come before biology? He said, yes, should. And then I realized that we can do that because they had their algebra, that's when they were having algebra 2. So I said, eureka, this can work great. And that advanced biology class is a serious class. And then after that, they're ready now for what really is a college-level molecular biology class. Again, we'll come back to the AP question in a minute. And then, of course, there's that physics class that we've already talked about, and some students want to try to do both, and most of them also want to do a foreign language, and you can't do everything, so you have to maybe make the hard choice. So, to conclude, I'll just rattle off a few quick considerations about AP courses, and then I won't dwell on this, and then that'll give us just a few minutes for more questions. Fortunately, you guys have been helpfully asking questions as we go, so that means there's a less of a big pile of them waiting. But here we go. I'm just going to track through this real quickly. Should we offer AP classes at all is a question schools wrestle with. I would say don't feel compelled to offer AP classes just because everybody seems to have AP classes. There are definite movements to move away from them because of the destructive things that they can produce in school. This high pressure, competitiveness, and all that. So there are schools that are just saying, I'm sick of that. And there are high level private schools, nationally known, that are just getting off the AP train because they see it's just ruining their students, turning them into these high fevered competition machines when they're 16 years old. I got to start taking AP classes as a sophomore. I got to have 15 of them on my record before I graduate. That is very hard on them. So whether you offer any or not, it depends on you, your school. I have always felt that some classes are easy to align with the AP syllabus, like calculus and statistics. I mean, it's pretty much what you would teach anyway. Other classes, like physics, not so much. So I think the decision's pretty easy in some cases and pretty hard in others. And I'll say more about that in just a moment. I've already mentioned about this, that AP Stats is the best, I think, senior class for the AP for the grade level students. And I've already talked about having both AP and non-AP calculus. In a classical school, the workload is typically quite high. Although I did talk to a teacher yesterday in the math discussion group last night that said in her school they are not allowed to give written homework ever, anywhere. So that's the first time I'd heard of a school doing that, that wasn't a public school or something. She said they can assign reading homework, but that's it. All written work has to be done in class. So obviously that's different if your school is like that. But I had three kids go through our school, and they had a lot of homework every single night. And it was hard, but it was, I think, good for them. They also had friends, and they hung out with them, and they did music and things like that. So their life wasn't total misery, but they had a lot of homework. So you got to think about the competition for the student's time, which is another reason why I've never even tried to propose doing things like science fair. It's just there's just too much going on, and you can overtax the students. Here's another major consideration is that in chemistry and biology, the lab requirement that goes along with the AP course is massive, and you really can't probably even do it unless you have Saturday labs. So, all right, another couple of points. So, kind of this one's obvious, consider each separate AP class on its own merits. And now, finally, a word about the new AP physics curriculum. You may have heard that the College Board has just revised the AP physics syllabus. It makes way more sense now than it used to. It's in two parts, part one and part two. I've studied it some. I'm not sure I don't know what I think about it yet. It looks more friendly to me than the previous arrangement. Whether I'm going to write my physics book that I write next year in a way that would be supportive of that or not. I haven't decided yet. I will real soon, but I'm not there yet. But anyway, it's interesting to consider, and it's a possibility. It's more open than I used to be about it. And finally, you know, we're classical schools, and we're Christian schools. And that means there's a way more that I want to do in my physics class than just cram for this murderous test that we're going to have at the end of the year that covers these very specific focused topics. I want to talk about quantum mechanics, for example, not with the mathematics, just qualitatively. And we do this by reading together In Search of Schrodinger's Cat. And we make every day before the exam Schrodinger Day. We call it Gribbin Day since John Gribbin wrote the book. And we come in and we have a Harkness discussion about that chapter. Chapter 6 before the 6th exam, you know, do that all year long. Kids love that. Another thing I want to do is talk about the centrality of Christ and the laws of nature and how they reflect his presence in the world, and they're just a testimony to the way he designed everything. These are topics I want to address. I don't want to be enslaved to the AP syllabus. So for that reason, I've never pursued the AP physics. So that's it for my talk, and I invite you to come around to the booth and take a look at our books if you haven't already done so. And so let's entertain questions for the few minutes we have remaining. Yes?
Can you speak to what you said earlier about labs in biology?
Well, there are a lot of them, and they're long. So it requires two-hour lab sessions, pretty much. Well, how else are you going to fit in a two-hour lab session? We don't do AP chemistry and AP biology. That's how we address it. We don't do those courses because those courses have a laboratory component that is a necessary.
So you were speaking
to Yeah. We do labs in chemistry and biology, yes. Yeah, we do them. And we try to make them. We fit them in, right? So, lots of labs. Way more than we do in physics, as a matter of fact. It's just that as many labs as there are and as much time as they consume, the AP requirement is much more than that. Yes?
Hi. Thanks. This is a provocative for me. What we have done in an effort to teach the cell biology and electrobiology, we do that. What your pathologist friend is saying is critical. I hate that we're graduating biology students not getting the necessary cell and electrobiology now. But what we did was move chemistry to the freshman year, and so it's a trade-off no matter what you're doing. It seems to me a kind of a trade-off with physics freshman year, just as there's a little trade-off with chemistry freshman year. I've rearranged the course.
Like acids and bases, that tends to come late. Yeah.
But is that your thinking that, I mean, I'm picturing my physics teacher me going home and doing this. We teach AP physics right now and knowledge physics. Isn't it just a choice three school where the strengths are?
The one thing I've learned talking with schools all the time is that every single school is different. Unique, and everybody has their own stack of considerations from parents to resources, you know, and everybody has already sort of solved this problem in their own mind, and everybody does everything differently. So what I'm doing here with this talk is showing the way I solved this problem and the benefits of doing it that way, and a lot of schools are right now, their highest grade is 8th or 9th grade or 10th, and they're adding a grade every year. And that is a real good time to think about these things. And so I think there are so many benefits to putting physics in 9th grade, and mathematically it works well. Yeah, it's easy. You don't have to really shift anything around. And then having, as I said, the physics before the chemistry, you have all these basic topics that are already well known to them, which saves a lot of time in the chemistry class and allows you to go a lot farther. So I see so many benefits to this sequencing that we've been doing for about 12 years, I think. And so it's proven itself over a very long period of time. Yeah. So I like to promote it. That's, but there are other ways to solve the problem, and so that's fine. Yes, Leslie. So we don't use the language of honors. What we say is, so a student is taking the accelerated math science sequence or the grade level one, and we do two different GPAs. One of them is an unweighted four-point scale GPA where math is math. You get 1 point for it. And then we have a weighted GPA that that students can use for scholarship applications and things like that. And in that GPA, the most demanding of the math track classes get you an extra point. And the ones that are sort of in the middle get you a half a point. And the grade level one gets you that 1 point that you would have gotten anyway. And this seems to be working pretty well. I'm not the guidance counselor or anything who came up with that, but it seems to be working all right. Other questions? We're out of time, but I can stay a minute or two. All right. Thank you for coming.
Thanks
for coming.
Yeah. I remember you, obviously. It's harder for you.
Well, no, but I saw a flyer about your right. new book, so I remembered you.
Yes.
So your picture's on the flyer. So
thanks again.
All right.
Good.
Thank you.